Founded in 1729, Arlington Street continues today as a gathering place for progressive people of faith in the greater Boston area and beyond. We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.
Good morning again, and thank you for your hospitality. It's great to be here. We just heard excerpts from the second movement of Sergei Rachmaninoff's second piano concerto. Back home in Sacramento, our church pianist told me a story about Rachmaninoff. She said that he was one of the great pianist composers of the world, admired both for his brilliant playing and his works of beauty. After the Bolshevik Revolution in Russia, he fled to the United States. His first concert was in Providence, Rhode Island. He settled in Manhattan with his family and later in life relocated to Beverly Hills, California. He was considered one of the most successful performing musicians of his time. Yet his fame and his success would never suggest the struggle and insecurity that he experienced throughout his life. In particular, he was forever haunted by the failure of his first symphony in 1887. At its premiere in St. Petersburg, an under-rehearsed orchestra with a probably inebriated conductor made it a fiasco. One critic compared it with the biblical 10 plagues of Egypt. He said that symphony was fit only for a music conservatory in hell. With his dreams crushed, Rachmaninoff plunged into a severe depression. For the next 3 years, he wrote almost nothing. Eventually, with the support of a psychiatrist, he could return to work. He dedicated the second piano concerto, which we just heard part of, to his doctor, Nikolai Dahl, who had helped him to climb out of despair and to restore his confidence. And what was the fate of that infamous first symphony? Rachmaninoff locked the manuscript away in a desk. He made no attempt to put together the orchestral parts for it before leaving St. Petersburg in haste. It was only after the composer's death in 1944, when the instrumental parts for it were discovered by accident in the archives of the Leningrad Conservatory of Music. The second performance of the piece was considered a success. It took place at the famed Moscow Conservatory in 1945. The American premiere took place in 1948 with Eugene Ormandy conducting the Philadelphia Orchestra. Rachmaninoff's reputation as a composer rose after his death. That symphony became part of the standard repertoire of great orchestras. From different times and places, these are some of the responses of listeners who were stunned by this work. One said it was one of the best romantic symphonies of all time. Another person said, I lived so long without being familiar with it. Peace to all. And if you meet rejection at first, it could mean that you are a power waiting to be recognized. I'm so glad to have heard that story. Stories are powerful aspects of human life. Stories can enrich us, challenge us, and connect us. Yet any of us can get hooked on stories that lead us away from connection. In the story Duck Rabbit, which Rebecca and I told to you, each of the characters had a story stuck in their head about what they saw. They were so convinced that they knew what they were looking at that they couldn't even consider another perspective, could not even imagine that there might be a larger story which could include both of them. They got so upset with each other that the story was no longer about the mystery to be explored, the story was about their conflict. Of course, there was a brief chance of a new story. They were going to ask the creature, "What do you call yourself?" But it was too late. They had scared it off. What's your story? When people meet, sometimes one will ask the other person, so what's your story? In the dominant culture, there are acceptable stock answers: your age, background, place of origin, family, field of work. And to be honest, if you don't have a sense that your listener will receive your story with care, you might be safe with stock answers. But as listeners and as speakers, we must remember that every life can be told from various angles. We contain many stories in us. Every story may have something in it that's true, but every story may not be helpful to keep on telling over and over. Some stories get in our way. We can get hooked on stories that keep us from accepting ourselves for who we are, or keep us from feeling grateful for our lives. They can sap our sense of purpose and our worth. Today, let's look at some good ideas for telling new stories. Diane Millis is a professor and a spiritual director in Minnesota. She's the author of a book entitled Recreating a Life. By this title, Millis doesn't mean creating a life that's different from the one you have. She's talking about the idea of taking the time to think about your life using a variety of perspectives. For example, Millis recommends that we imagine our stories in the third person. Rather than thinking, I did this or that happened to me, we should think about ourselves as the main character in a narrative. Our narrator's perspective should be a perspective of compassion. The story can bear witness to pain experienced by the main character, but it can also bear witness to the courage, fortitude, and survival of that main character. The narrator could highlight the moments of goodness, the parts of the story that enrich life. Millis recommends also that we start the story in the way that we would start a fairy tale. Once upon a time, she urges us to sit down and write it out. Take only 15 minutes, she says. It doesn't have to be long, just a page or two. Of course, like a fairy tale, our story might have dangers and hardships in it, but it might also contain unpredictable journeys, twists and turns. Consider, when did upset plans bring this person to a surprising place in their life? Tell the parts of the story that show your lead character's endurance and ingenuity. Describe the gestures of kindness that this person received and the kindness that they gave to others. Diane Millis advises, you are the story you tell yourself, so make sure you tell yourself a good story. Once upon a time, when Diane Millis was a little girl in Minnesota, she thought she had a perfect life, and she tried very hard to keep it that way. Yet her parents divorced, and she and her mother moved away from Minnesota to Arizona. She left behind her family, her school, and her sense of trying to hold everything together. Her world was broken apart. In early adulthood, she used to wonder, what if that little girl's parents had not split up and she had not moved away? How much better could her life be if that hadn't happened? Now, however, many years later, she can admire that little girl's endurance and her strength. She gives thanks for the people she met along the way, and she can identify the talents which she developed in the midst of it all. For example, her ordeals taught her the practice of compassionate listening, and she's able to bring this practice to her life now as a mother, wife, teacher, and listening professional, a spiritual director. She says, we must hold our stories lightly, not tightly. This is how we can receive the stories of others as well, lightly, not tightly. Too often the stories we tell are saturated with problems. It's tempting to feel connected with other people by telling sad stories, to bond over lamenting or complaining or grumbling. Yet stories like that can also be draining. The problem-saturated story is not the only story. It's one of many that we could tell. Perhaps it would connect us even more if we included some shining moments in our stories. Assuming that we're not trying to one-up one another or we're not telling a lie, we can share the moments in our stories that shine for us. Millis doesn't say that we should ignore pain or sweep away problems, only allow the shining moments to be seen. 28 years ago, I began in ministry. I began serving a congregation in Sunnyvale, California. And soon after starting there, I came here to Boston to attend a training for a group of new ministers that was hosted at the Unitarian Universalist Association headquarters. Our trainer was the Reverend Dr. Larry Pierce. Some of you may know Larry. He has been a wonderful mentor and consultant. On our first day of the training, Larry said to us, "I know that you can outdo each other with a problem-saturated story about your congregation, so I'm not going to ask for that. Instead, I'm going to ask you to think of three shining moments from the life of your congregation." He told us to take some time in silence to think. And then he had us go around in a circle three times, each person offering one shining moment, and then we would go around and offer a second, and then a third. And after we had done all this, told our stories to the group, we felt hopeful and confident about our work. As we heard shining moments told by others, we felt happy. We gave thanks for one another's ministry. This brought us together, hearing and telling these shining moments. It left us in a better mood than a problem-saturated story could have done. You are the story you tell yourself, so make sure you tell yourself a good story. Looking at the boy, who is the main character of my own life, I could tell a sad story, or several of them, and I have on a number of occasions, but I don't ever recall having told my story in the third person, and this time around I can add some shining moments to it. So here goes. Once upon a time, in a dysfunctional, distracted family, this boy didn't feel welcome. You could say his days were saturated with loneliness. But on many evenings, he learned to play card games at the nearby home at his mother's elderly aunt. And he spent whole days at the house of his cousins and his Uncle Roger and Aunt Mary. He enjoyed many home-cooked meals there, trying out some dishes he had never heard of before. His uncle had served as a cook in the Navy on a ship in the Second World War. When his uncle recalled the task of making a turkey dinner for Thanksgiving for hundreds of men out at sea, describing it in detail, his uncle's eyes twinkled. In school, this boy felt lonely and shy. Very self-conscious. Yet, once in high school, he became a high school newspaper reporter and then an editor. And being a newspaper reporter made it easier for him to get other kids to talk, which relieved his awkwardness. It made teachers notice his work and compliment him sometimes, and he liked that. He was a people pleaser, and he rarely wanted to make waves. So he often held himself back in many situations. However, armed with a reporter's notepad and a pen, and fired up with knowledge of his First Amendment right to the freedom of the press, he sat in the principal's office grilling the man with questions about school policies. Another time, this kid argued with a tall, white, male history teacher who didn't like an editorial opinion he'd written and published in the newspaper. But he stood his ground. Back then, the boy didn't know that he was armed not only with the First Amendment rights of freedom of the press, but armed also with privilege as a male and as a white person that made it easier for him to get away with being so bold with authority figures. But if he had known about this privilege, he might have written or spoken about that also. In any case, he can do so now. This boy dreaded physical education class in school, feeling self-conscious and inadequate. So many dropped baseballs in the outfield, so many basketballs missing the basket, and he never understood football. Yet in high school physical education class, he learned how to swim laps. He was never a competitor at swimming, but using that skill has given him exercise and good health for decades, and he still enjoys it. So that's me in the third person. Once I started writing this, I remembered other shining moments from my story. It made me feel better. Not only do I have more compassion for the kid who's the main character of that story, I like him better than he liked himself. We must hold our stories lightly, not tightly, except for one kind of story, and that's our phantom stories. We can let go of them altogether. Phantom stories haunt us with lives that we didn't live. They include asking the what-if questions and lamenting the if-onlys of our lives. Sometimes I listen to phantom stories. If only I had stayed in that relationship or the other one. If only I'd gone to law school or medical school. What if I'd majored in computer science? Phantom stories are so powerful as to seem real and realistic, but they're not real. They get in the way of appreciating the life that we have. Instead of telling a phantom story, let's consider the story that we want to create for the days ahead of us, the story that we're creating right now. And let us remember that every story is incomplete and unfinished. As I mentioned earlier, Sergei Rachmaninoff's first symphony was rejected by critics when it premiered, in part because the orchestra played it badly and in part because it was bold and unfamiliar. The story of rejection and failure haunted him for years, and he left that composition locked away for the rest of his life. However, with compassion and guidance from his doctor, support from a listening professional, from a caring person, Rachmaninoff kept on composing. And fortunately, that bold first symphony was discovered some years later. It was published and played, and it continues to enrich the world. Every story is incomplete and unfinished, even after we're gone. We don't have to be a composer whose early work was hidden away for this to be true. There's always more to be heard, always more to understand. Let us imagine that a larger story remains always to be unveiled and to be appreciated. Let us consider our own stories and write them and tell them with as much compassion as we can. And let us hold the tough moments with love and celebrate the moments that shine. Doing this will help us to bear witness to others so they can tell their stories. It will help us to receive their stories with care. Stories enrich us, connect us, and challenge us. They are gifts we share. May we be grateful for these gifts in all the days to come. So may it be. Blessed be, and amen. May you depart in peace and be led forth in joy. For all who see God, may God go with you. For those who embrace life, may life return your affection. And for all who seek a right path, may a way be found and the courage to take it step by step, one day at a time. Blessed be. Amen. Thank you.
We are located at the corner of Arlington and Boylston Streets, across from the Public Garden in Boston, Massachusetts. Arlington Street Church, gathered in love and service for justice and peace.